You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Happy Thursday to you. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Gester here. It's Sports Daily. Max Powers producing. We got a lot to talk about on today's show. We're excited to do it with you here on KFH, 97.5 FM. Thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected. If you're seeing us on Facebook or YouTube or X, we appreciate you as well. Good place to leave your comments. If you can't, give us a call. And of course, if you're listening to us on the Odyssey app anytime, even from the future, you can leave us voice messages there with a little microphone that we can get and play out over the air if they're relevant to the conversation. So thanks for being here. However it is, we'll give away some HTO today for you. The Royals win again. We'll certainly get into that with a similar sort of score that they've been living with lately. And a rookie debut that was one for the memory books. And we'll have that for you. The Luka LeBron Lakers get bounced in the first round. We might talk a little NBA today. Tommy, the headline, Minnesota missed 40 threes in a game and won. But they missed 40 threes.
Hey, that's the NBA for you, right? Those are just like wild, wild situations when they happen. And you've got a star-packed team with LeBron and Luka, J.J. Redick coaching the team, all of that, all the hype surrounding it, and they go home and the Timberwolves move on.
Yeah, it's good for the Timberwolves, good for a guy Brandon Zinner, all the starved Minnesota sports fans for a championship. Who knows? It's a pretty good team. We'll see. But we might talk a little NBA playoffs as well. Fred VanVleet and the Rockets, of course, former Shocker, extend their lives a little bit. We can look into the NFL, of course, and all the things happening there with these rookies and the fallout from Shedeur Sanders. You just keep getting more and more reaction and more information that really tells you, man, this was self-inflicted. So we'll have a lot for you today. Your calls, commentary, we really appreciate it. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Man, I'm good. Happy Thursday. Today was kind of a revelation for me. We've talked before about how, you know, that we're getting into springtime, summer, all of that. And, you know, when you're on the radio this early in the morning, typically you're driving in and it's pitch black outside, dark out. Today was the first day that I wore sunglasses driving into the studio. Sun was coming up, kind of glaring right in my eyes. I put sunglasses on, and I was happy to do it. We're getting it's to that promising. Time of year when the sun's coming up really early now, and I love it. I'm here for it.
Yeah, that is a promising development. To a similar degree, I have to wear them on the way home from work now. So, you know, I guess that's a good sign too, right? We're all getting there. We're all going to be in the sunshine. We're going to go play a little golf. Shout out to Crestview Country Club tomorrow. If you're out there and you want to throw something at us or yell during Tommy's backswing, I'd encourage it to our great Crestview listeners out there. That's the problem. We can't really bet when we play golf because, you know.
Sure, we can.
But I got like a 25 handicap here. I mean, you going to give me 25 strokes?
I don't know if I would give you 25 strokes. I might give you 15 strokes or 18 strokes. When you start getting up to a point to where I'm giving you more than one stroke per hole, at that point, I'm kind of done. I'm like, all right, that's not like.
That's what I mean.
Like, you get a double bogey and you're really parring it. Like, I'm not a fan of that. Come on.
Yeah. I'm not either. That's my thing. Like, how do you even attack that sort of discrepancy when you're going to put a little scratch on it like you should? What are you supposed to do there?
I mean, like there's a kind of a famous exchange in a press conference that I think happened a few months ago with Scottie Scheffler, and he was talking about playing golf like with his buddies, and he's got a couple of buddies that are, you know, they're hacks. They're regular golfers like you and I, and they go out on the course and they bet, and he gives them strokes and he ends up giving him money at the end of the day. Like that, it's the great equalizer when you're getting strokes or giving strokes. Like that's the great equalizer in the game of golf.
Yeah, I suppose, but I doubt you're going to give me any strokes when we're playing tomorrow.
I don't know if I'm not going to give you 25, but I think within reason, I can probably give you some.
What's your handicap these days, Mr. Castor?
I believe I'm a 7. So if you're 25, I'd give you 18. I'd give you a stroke a hole, basically.
18 strokes.
Yeah, I'd give you one stroke per hole.
Okay. We can do that. I love it though. I'm trying to talk myself into like a new driver. Here's my logic, and I know this is dangerous road. I don't need a lecture. I'm trying to like win enough bets here in baseball to justify getting a new driver. That's my work. And I've been doing okay. I'm up like $50.
Isn't that how you paid for your new set of irons? Is because you bet enough and you made enough money that you were able to get a new set of irons?
That is correct. Okay. Yes, except that was football, which is more of a comfortable space for me in the betting world. I got nothing. You know, with the NBA, I'm just like looking at all the sites. I let the internet talk me into a hockey bet last night. I don't think that did anything, but I'm betting like $5, like nothing crazy. I'm loving it. Here's what I'm loving doing with it. And this would be a jackpot type situation. I'm trying to like string together three dudes in a home run parlay. So like pick three guys. And I think I'm 0-for-6 the last 2 days when I've been doing it. What I have been doing well at is like, three-leg baseball or four-leg baseball parlays for like $5. And the Rangers let me down last night. I already hit another one, and I've been halfway to a driver.
Money lines with those parlays? Are you betting against the spread? What's the play?
No, just money line. Okay. Baseball's a tricky one. I don't know. Like there, because usually when you have like David versus Goliath, you do the, you know, -1.5 to get it closer to even. And last year, the first year that we started having betting here, it became pretty apparent how many baseball games are one-run games. So, like, you'd be like, oh, yeah, the Dodgers are going to smash there. And they'd end up winning by one. And you're like, well, crap, right? Like, so it's a work in progress. Maybe by halfway through the, through the golf season, I'll have hit enough of these to get up there and to do something, or maybe I'll, you know, trust the internet and go find some of the aggregators and see what kind of good NBA playoff bets there are and try to put one of those together. But it's a little tricky. I'm ready to get in on the playoffs though. Like once we get through this round, even with these games now, like Timberwolves Lakers has been fun and was fun eliminated. Like now we're to the point because it is wide open in the NBA. We've talked about this before. There are favorites, but are there really favorites? At least in the NBA, we've gotten away from like the super teams, right? I think it feels pretty open. Now, that's, again, coming from total. Like, I'm just coming in here. Like, I'm just kind of dipping my toe in the water for the NBA this year, now that we're into the almost the second round. But it does feel like there's a lot of teams that can win a title. And I think it's awesome that Minnesota's one of those teams.
Well, and think about, too, you mentioned at the top, you know, Fred VanVleet and the Rockets. Like, they stayed alive in the series. But Golden State, you know, has not – they're not the Golden State of – 5 years ago or 8 years ago. They're a different team. I mean, you know, Curry is older. They've got Jimmy Butler in, obviously, and that has kind of helped them a little bit. But they're not this, like, juggernaut world beater of a team, and they're on the verge of winning their series, too, against Houston. So, yeah, I mean, to your point, I do think it's pretty wide open right now.
Yeah, it feels good, and we'll start to dig in there a little bit. But let's talk Royals when we come back. 3-0 winners, Noah Cameron with a dazzling debut in a lot of ways. We'll have it next. Don't go away.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company, from America for America.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high-quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through 2 cartons in 1 day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule. And there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something...
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and get up to 50% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Glad to be here with you on Sports Daily. It's a lot of fun this time of year. We get baseball every night. We've got the NBA playoffs revving up. We've got the NHL playoffs. Max has given me a hard time. Hockey playoffs are the best, Max says. Max, I honestly, like, I don't even disagree with you. Hockey playoffs are fantastic. I just don't know any of the players anymore.
Don't matter. It's constant action.
But I love the NHL playoffs. So Max wants to know what I'm betting. I don't know, Max. What should I bet? Like, I don't know.
Well, you should definitely bet the Capitals over the Canadians. Canadians are frauds. I like Winnipeg and Toronto for the finals, but Winnipeg.
Now, is that a political statement? Canadians are frauds?
No, the Montreal Canadian team is a fraud.
Oh, the hockey team. Okay, I got you.
Getting a little bit of controversy on the show today.
It's in vogue to talk trash about our northern neighbors right now, I think. Say that again. Who should I be betting?
If you were betting last night, I would have took Washington.
Past last night. I don't need.
Who do you like in the finals? I like Winnipeg and Toronto for the finals.
Okay.
But two Canadian teams. Winnipeg, I was a Maple Leafs fan as growing up, so
they struggled against.
All right, I'm sure there's futures bets. Maybe I'll just double them up to reach the finals here in hockey. We'll get that queued up and ready to go. I'll tell you what the number on that is in a little bit. Tommy, Noah Cameron last night. That was interesting. I joked after the first inning that he was perfect through one, and then all of a sudden drive home, look up, and he's no hitting them through six and a third. Now, he did have five walks, but look, we said it yesterday. There's an opportunity here for him. He's been really effective now for about 70 AAA innings between last year and this year. This is a, I think raises that floor a little bit for the Royals, because if he really can, basically, if he can do what Marsh did for them last year, I think is reasonable expectation, because they still have Marsh. It not only gives them a little cushion for this year, it gives them a trade piece for a bat they desperately need.
Yeah, it gives them a trade piece, but it also gives them potentially like a foundation for pitching long term, from a long time from now and into the future if they want to keep him. I thought he certainly looked the part last night. And I know that when, you come out in your major league debut and you throw six and a third hitless innings, you're going to obviously look the real deal and look the part like you belong at that stage. We'll see if he's able to back that up in future opportunities that he's got. But one thing that I thought of as he's pitching last night, as he's going through, and again, yeah, I know he scattered a couple of walks here and there, but he got out of it clean, didn't have any runs get across when he was, out there. But one thing I thought about was, man, again, the Brady Singer trade looks a whole lot better right now, because they it did before anyway, too, because the starting five, the original five in that rotation have been really, really good this year. But now you've got another piece that can come in and provide additional depth. And oh, by the way, Alec Marsh is waiting in the wings because he's, dealing with an injury and coming back from that. And oh, by the way, they've also got Kyle Wright, who's a wild card. We don't know about him, but he's coming back from injury. They've got a lot of starting pitching pieces that are there right now. And so that made, obviously we know Brady Singer, they obviously felt like was expendable when they traded him for Jonathan India in the offseason. But even more so when you're looking at it now, like, man, they've got additional depth pieces for situations like what they ran into recently with Cole Reagans exiting with an injury and missing a start.
Yeah, it's depth. And I'm not saying they trade Cameron, but maybe they can trade Marsh. It allowed them to trade Singer. And I'm not convinced that was, you know, the Royals can still lose that trade just because they have the pitching depth to withstand it. Brady Singer's, he's got a 3.20 ERA right now. Like, he's in a 4-1 record, Tom. Like, he's been really good for the Reds. Like, much better, I would say, than Jonathan India has been for the Royals.
Well, I don't know
so
about
far.
That. I mean, I think that Jonathan India has played his part, you know, for the most part. I mean, again, he's not hitting great, but he provides them a ton of versatility and flexibility in the field. I mean, all the different positions he's been able to play. I mean, he's been kind of that super utility guy for them, you know, giving them presence in the outfield when they've needed it. And they've needed it several different times this season. Third base, obviously. Like, I think that he's provided them that. And he's been able to get on base, I think, at a higher clip than anything that they had. Because you have to look at it from a replacement value perspective with what they had at the leadoff spot last year. I think they absolutely, I don't want to say that they've won the trade at this point, but I do think that they've accomplished what they've needed to in bringing in a pure leadoff hitter in Jonathan India. And I think it's okay that the Reds have been able to, you know, have that part of their trade pay off as well with Brady Singer. I think both things can be true at the same time.
Yeah, I don't know. His on-base percentage is the same as, you know, He's getting on base like 320. He was about the same as like Freddie Fermin last year. His batting average is bad. Like, he's hitting for no pop. He's got a 265 slug. He's hitting 216. He has not been a success story so far. Like, he's not. Now, I'm still fine with it. I think he's gonna be okay. But I don't want to be unfair to that. Like, if we're just talking about player for player, like, Brady Singer's been better.
But why do we have to go player for player? Like, why can't we talk about
trade was? Yeah, but player.
I get it. But why can't we talk about each one of these guys filling a need that the other team needed?
But is India filling a need? He's getting on base. Like, I don't know if he is.
Would you rather have? Would you rather have somebody else in the field other than Jonathan India?
He's hitting 216.
Who would you rather have in the leadoff spot right now for Kansas City as opposed to Jonathan India? Who would you rather up there?
I don't know who I would put up there. Like, Drew Waters probably at the moment. Like, I don't know. But I'm saying, like, he's not, like, commanding this position the way we think he will. And I do still think he will, by the way. I think he, like a lot of people, are going to hit a groove offensively. He just needs to hit his normal. Right? Like, India just needs to be what he's always been.
I mean, you do realize his OPS overall right now is not that much lower than Salvador Perez. Like, it's not that much behind where Salvi has been this season.
And Salvi has been off to a disappointing start until the last week. I mean, he has. It's okay to say India has been disappointing so far.
I don't think he's been disappointing. I think he's adequately filled. I don't think he's been amazing. I don't think he's lit the world on fire. Don't get me wrong. He's not the MVP of this team, but they sorely needed a leadoff bat and somebody who could come in and be a little bit flexible in the field and fill that role. And I think he's done that adequately. Can he be better? Absolutely he can. He can get on base more. He's been caught stealing a couple of times, which is disappointing from your leadoff guy. He's not hitting for power right now. Like, I understand all of that, but I do think that he has adequately filled a role that the Royals desperately needed. And it was their number one objective, I think, going into the offseason after last season.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not saying I don't like the trade, but I'm not going to tell you that I think Jonathan India has done a good job. He's well below he's well below his own averages in every single category. So they just need him to be him. And I think he will be. But I don't think it's fair to Brady Singer to not point out the fact that
Brady Singer's been great. He's been wonderful, but I mean, I understand that it was a straight up one for one trade, but also, I mean, I think that it's, you know, a little cliche to be like, who won that trade? I think both teams, with what they needed to accomplish in the trade so far, I think both teams have been able to accomplish that.
I think they will. I think they will. So I don't want to, this isn't me knocking. It's not, it's more of a tip of the cap to Brady Singer. Either way, remember what they were able to do with Brady Singer. Back to the original point of the conversation, they were able to go make a trade like that, and with either Marsh or I would doubt they trade Cameron, but they do have some depth. You know, it allows them to go make that type of trade for a big league player if they need to at the deadline to help the offense, which continues to struggle. Vinny Pasquantino had an early home run, and the Royals, what did they have last night? 11 hits. I think 11. They had 11 hits and score three runs. I mean, like, that's hard to do. That's really hard to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all at the point, at least I am, where I'm not surprised by that. And it's not to me like I'm wringing my hands and being like, oh, my God, what are they going to do? I think that what they have shown, and they've done this in back-to-back games, and they've done it in several other games, too. They've gotten out to a lead early. They put two on the board in the top of the first and provided Noah Cameron a little bit of a cushion. Again, it's not a team that is able to come back from behind. At least we haven't seen that evidence at all during this season. So it becomes that much more critical to get out on the board early. And that's what they've been able to do so far in this series in both of the games and provide a little bit of cushion, you know, and then ultimately be able to let your starter go to work. That's been the recipe for success for the Royals. I think it's remarkable that we're now through the end of April and they go on a 2-8 road trip and they still finish the month over 500. Like, that's remarkable to me. And they're doing it by scoring the least amount of runs in Major League Baseball. It's just, again, another tip of the cap to the pitching staff. And the starters have been phenomenal. They have been flawless for the most part. And again, I think that you have to take that into consideration as well. If you want to talk about the Brady Singer and Jonathan India trade, is that, you know, yeah, like Singer has been fantastic for the Reds so far. The Royals have been fantastic with their pitching staff, and they haven't missed a beat without Singer in the rotation.
Because they've been good. They've still been good in pitching. And
they've not missed a beat in their rotation, even without Singer in that rotation.
There are all kinds of situations where you feel good about a trade that you lose. Cole Reagans is a Royal because of a trade that the Rangers made to win a World Series, but absolutely lost. Right, the thought of giving up Cole Reagans to get Aroldis Chapman, like the Rangers absolutely lost that trade, still worked out for them.
I just don't think it's that important. Like, I guess I don't subscribe to the whole notion of like, you know, oh, we need to figure out which team won the trade or which team lost the trade. Both teams filled the role that they needed, and it's great that Brady Singer is doing phenomenal. And I think that it would be a little bit more out in the open if the Royals rotation was struggling. Then it would be like, man, they lost Brady Singer and they need him bad. There's not been a single moment, at least for me so far this season, where I'm like, man, the Royals really wish they had Brady Singer
and
right
that's
now.
That's what I meant by what I just said. Like, yeah, the Rangers just traded a Cy Young candidate, you know, in Cole Reagans, but they won a World Series because they put Chapman in a spot of need at the moment. Brady Singer is great, but they're showing you right now they didn't need him as much as other teams need that kind of starter because they've got a bunch of good ones. And now they might have, honestly, they might have seven good ones, even without him. And so that's your position of strength. How do you utilize that now to go fix the flaw that you have? And that's what they'll have to do. India's going to hit more. Like, he's confident. Like, I'm not worried about him. But they need another bat. Like, he's not going to do the thing that they need so desperately right now, which is a run producer, driver inner, whatever you want to call it, which is what they need. And that's where they've struggled, but it's okay because their bullpen's been great. Their pitching's been great. And they win again last night, 3-0 against the Rays. They get day baseball today. It'll be another good pitching matchup. Shane Boz, the Rays can just sort of, you know, roll those guys out there, but Seth Lugo's on the mound. Hopefully he follows up his best start of the year and they'll try for a sweep. And then they go to Baltimore and face a struggling Royals team. Now, if you can't score on Baltimore at the moment, the way they're going, you might really have some problems. One of the only four games in the first, 31 that the Royals have scored more than four runs came against the Orioles, at least. So there's that. But only four times in 31 games they've scored more than four runs and they have a record above 500.
Yeah,
that is wild.
And they, you know, this will be, I mean, after the win last night, that's what, three series in a row that the Royals have won. They swept the Rockies. Yes. They took two of three from the Astros and now they've won the series against the Rays. And we talked about it yesterday, the fact that they follow up this series with Tampa Bay by playing a Baltimore team that has disappointed so far this season. I believe the Orioles will turn it around. I don't know if they'll, you know, make a huge push or not, but I don't think they're nearly as bad as what their record suggests they are right now. But I do think that it's advantageous for the Royals to get Baltimore at this point in the season. They played them once at home. Now they get them in Baltimore. I think it's definitely advantageous that they get them now.
No question. I totally agree. I'm glad they're playing all of their games, I think, against the Orioles right now. That's a good team. Team they beat in the playoffs last year, you might remember. But Cameron is great. 6 1/3, the 5 walks. He's not elite. He doesn't look elite, but he navigates it, and that's what they'll need. The bullpen, Urcig, sort of survived another. He had a base runner. That he remains really, really good. How about John Schreiber? Estevez was going to get the headline of the night because he was able to get through it. He didn't have a totally clean inning again. One cheap hit that I don't know that you worry about, and then one legit one. And Schreiber's been good now. That's another one. So now you got Urcig, you got Lynch, maybe you got Schreiber, you got Estevez back there. We'll see with Harvey.
Zerpa has kind of turned things around a little bit. He's got that ERA down. He's been better in the last couple of weeks.
They look good there. And I just wonder if there's not a India Singer type of trade that they could make earlier than normal, right? Because everybody's always looking for starting pitching. Always. What if the Royals get hyper-aggressive? What if they're like, you know what? Cameron, did everybody see that? We need an outfielder. Who's got one?
Yeah, I don't think that that's realistic. I mean, I don't think they go one start from this guy and then they start dangling him as trade bait. I don't see that.
I'm approaching it like a fantasy guy. Like, that's what I would do. I'd be like, hey, look how good he is. Now let's make a trade right now, right this second.
By the way, I think that's a little bit unfair to Noah Cameron as well. Like, he gets his major league debut and he dazzles in 6 1/3. And we're talking about trading the guy. Like, come on. Like, let's let him, develop a little bit more.
It's 100% unfair. I'm talking only about the desperation they have at the moment in the lineup. And
I don't know if they do. I mean, I think we do. I think generally speaking, everybody does to an extent. Like, they're only scoring 3 runs a game with their pitching now. Yeah. Like, if they can, I don't love it. I want to see them score more than 2 or 3 runs a game. Absolutely. I do. But when you're starting pitching and your bullpen, when the entire pitching staff is producing the way that they are, you can absolutely win games 3-0 or 4-1 or 4-2, whatever it is. Like, they can absolutely do that. And we said yesterday, 4 is kind of the magic number for them. Like, if they can get to 4 runs in a game, then you feel significantly more comfortable.
But then you also have to look at a stretch like they did, where they lost 7 out of 8 or whatever it was, and they actually were getting good pitching in a lot of those games, and they couldn't score more than a run, when they face good pitching. So I'd rather start with good pitching than good hitting, but I'm not sure they're getting enough now. And the reality is, and I joke about the Royals offense a lot, honestly, I do think they need another bat. That's not a joke. But I also think Vinny and Salvi and India are all going to hit more than they've hit. And so I think a lot of this will come internally. I think this is, again, just like last year, this is going to be a streaky offense. They just haven't streaked at the same time. Bobby Witt Jr. has been great. Mikel Garcia has been great. They'll be okay, but they do need another bat. And they do have a position of strength now in the rotation with Marsh and Cameron, potentially, if Marsh comes back and is okay, sitting there waiting. Right? Like, you just like they did when they traded for India. Can they pull off a move like that in the middle of the season? I don't think it's too early to kick the tires if you're JJ Piccolo, and he is, because this looks like a team that should be in great shape to do what we thought it would do. Again, day baseball today, you'll hear it. You'll get it here on KFH, and you'll get like an hour. Yeah, you'll get us till 11, then Rich Eisen for an hour, and that'll take you right into Royals baseball. I've got Max's hockey bet in. It is plus 30, so like 3,000 to 1. So 30 to 1 odds, plus 3,000 that the Maple Leafs and the Jets meet in the Stanley Cup Finals. Neither has to win it. They just each win their conference. That gets me $150 on a $5 bet. It's getting me closer to a driver. Max, I appreciate it. I appreciate your contributions.
I don't know anything about that bet. And very little about the NHL playoffs, so my fingers are crossed for you. I'm rooting for you. Hope you win. I can give you no analysis on that.
The Leafs haven't won since '67, and Winnipeg is a really good team. I mean,
When was the last time a Canadian
Edmonton
Stanley Cup Finals?
When's the last time a Canadian team won the Stanley Cup Finals? I have no idea. Probably not that long ago.
Isn't that the streak? Like, isn't that the streak, Max? It's been forever.
Yes, I think might have been Montreal.
Let's see. I'm looking it up right now. It's been 30 years. 92, 93.
Montreal.
The Canadians in 93 beat the Kings. Yeah. So it's been 33 years.
It's always been kind of nice to hold that over the heads. Of course, even though most of the players for the American teams that win are Canadian, it's been nice to hold that over their heads. So if Max's bet hits, that streak will be broken.
Do you know who the main star of that Canadiens team was in 93, Jacob?
You said it was the Montreal Canadiens? Uh-huh. 92.
I don't know a lot of NHL players, but I do know this name.
It's not Gretzky.
Yeah, it's not Gretzky.
He's on the Kings.
Patrick Waugh. Remember Patrick Waugh?
I forgot he was there.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, like there was like the early 90s, probably right around that time, maybe a little bit later than 92, 93. So probably like mid to late 90s, I guess it would be. Like I knew all the players and I knew them because I had like a video game that I loved. And so you know them all when you do. And so I was a big hockey fan back then, like a huge hockey fan. Remember the goalie? Max will remember his name. It was Felix Potvin for the Maple Leafs. Max?
Yes. Felix the Cat.
He was my favorite goalie on that game. So I was like, I'm going to be a Maple Leafs fan. And then the Stars won their championship. And I was like, oh, that's kind of fun. But I've never really been a fan of theirs. And now I kind of am in the ether. I've always said, like, if, you know, when I was younger, I was like, if I ever end up in a city with a pro hockey team, like a NHL hockey team, I'm just going to be like a diehard fan of that team, whatever it is. Because hockey's so much fun. Now I have a reason to watch. I appreciate that, Max. Here we go. The NBA playoffs. Lots of reasons to watch the NBA playoffs. Still a lot more locked in there. But the Lakers lose last night. They're the 3 seed, Tommy. They get Luka. All the fanfare, all the noise surrounding all of this stuff. And they fall in the opening round of the Timberwolves. 4-1. Minnesota, I can't get over this. Minnesota missed 40 threes. Didn't take, you know, missed 40 threes last night and still found a way to win that game. A lot of little things out of that game that are fun. Rudy Gobert gets a little revenge, right? Everybody likes to dog on Gobert and his style of basketball will never work. Well, he was the reason they won that game last night. And Luka Doncic.
He went for 20-20.
Yeah. Yeah. Luka Doncic's defensive deficiencies also reared their ugly head in that game last night. And so the Lakers said, and they'll be the story today, not the Timberwolves, even though I think the Timberwolves are legitimate contenders here because they have arguably the best player in the game right now in Anthony Edwards. But the Lakers sit here as an early exit. I don't know. What did we expect of the Lakers this year, Tommy? I mean, I know they made the Luka trade this year. I don't think I ever thought it was going to like lead them to a title right now. That's not why it was criminal what the Mavs did. It's because they get to like extend the Lakers' run with Luka once LeBron passes the torch. I didn't put a lot of thought into whether they could get it done because I just didn't think they could. Now it becomes, can they put something around those two guys to win it? I don't know. It's an interesting question.
Well, I think at the micro level, I mean, I'm sure JJ Redick, at least if I were him, I would be second guessing some of the decisions, at least in last night's game. He didn't play any players with any kind of size whatsoever. And so Rudy Gobert had to basically, I mean, he had this size advantage and he was able to feast on that. And I think in retrospect, you know, I know they kind of were daring Gobert to like go out and do it. And he did for sure. I mean, there was not a single player. I think I read this earlier today, not a single player that played for the Lakers in the starting lineup last night that was taller than 6'8". So they didn't start their starting center, Jackson Hayes. Alex Lynn didn't play in the game either. Like these guys did not, there was no height, there was no size. And Gobert was able to just absolutely feast on that. So in an elimination game, I'm not sure why you make that decision other than we want Gobert to try to go out and beat you. But if Gobert, you know, shows that he's able to do that, midway through the game, make a change, make an adjustment, and they weren't able to do that. And so I think in the micro, that's one thing for sure that the Lakers have to be kicking themselves on today. In the macro, We're less than 12 hours removed from the elimination game, and already all the headlines are, is LeBron going to come back? His future. What's going to happen? Like, that will dominate the storylines and the talk shows for months from now.
And it should.
I'm not saying it shouldn't, but we can't even have a conversation about, can the Lakers win a title with Luka until we know what's going to happen with LeBron? Right.
I assume, honestly, that LeBron will come back. He's just still playing at such a high level. And I'm sure he will, too.
Let's end the speculation early, get it done,
and then the Lakers can go ahead and start to rebuild. This time. I don't know. But, I get it. We're the same age. He probably would like to at least think about it. But he's probably made that decision a while ago. I doubt he expected a first round exit. But I also think he's been around the game long enough to know they're not quite where they need to be to go win a title. Now, what can they do around those two guys to do it? Give those two guys a full off season to really work together and see. I think I'll just assume LeBron is coming back. Because if LeBron doesn't come back, can the Lakers over time win a championship with Luka? Of course they can. Luka made it to the finals last year with the Mavs. Yes, they absolutely can. But I think for another year, it'll probably include LeBron. So then it's okay, will that combination be able to? And I think it's a really interesting idea. They're similar players, right? Luka's always been called the next LeBron. Now, he doesn't defend like LeBron defends, but, kind of the style and the things that they can do on the floor. I don't know if it works together. I think it'll be the most curious thing of the offseason, for sure. Unless LeBron just comes right out and says, yeah, I'll be back, which almost never happens. I think it's worth discussing. And again, it doesn't mean that the Mavericks can't sit back and be like, ha ha ha, we told you so. Look at the Lakers now. No, that's not how that works, Mavericks. No,
I'm sure that Nico Harrison's thinking that this morning, though. I showed you guys.
Yeah, it's just I've said this before. The reason I think this is the worst trade that's ever been made isn't because I think Luka, the Mavs could be right about moving Luka. It's because they didn't get anything for him. They could absolutely be right that it was never going to work with. They could totally be right about all of that. But the fact that they didn't get anything for him or shop him, or that's what makes the trade the worst trade in history. It's the biggest undersell of the biggest asset we've ever seen in sports. It's not that they were right or wrong about moving on from Luka. And so, whatever. You don't get to do that, Mavs. You don't get to do that because Jalen Brunson's still rubbing it in your face. And I don't think Nico Harrison was the one that decided not to let Jalen Brunson. I don't know that, though. Whatever. Fred VanVleet gets a win. Tommy, last night, keeping their hopes alive. That's it. The Rockets are interesting. They sneak around, and if you weren't paying attention, you wouldn't have realized they're a 2-seed. Fred VanVleet just continues to prove he's a winner. Such a great story. They're deep. They've got all these good young players. But the Warriors have been the darlings of the NBA since they added Jimmy Butler. And Jimmy Butler wasn't very good last night. And we've seen this from Jimmy Butler over the years when he was with the Heat. He would have these games where he didn't do anything and then he'd just kill you. So, that's probably coming. I'm not smart enough to sit here and tell you the Rockets do or don't have a chance in this series, but it's good to see him get a win. I mean, Fred VanVleet have a great game, yeah. Not just a good game, but a great game.
I definitely think if Fred can continue to shoot the way that he has, then yeah, I think the Rockets do have a chance to at least force a game seven. VanVleet has been 12 of 18 shooting threes in the last two games. He's been lights out effective for them. And so that's the key difference maker for Houston for this series to continue. I'm not ready to predict that they're going to win the next two games and go to the next round. But I certainly think that if VanVleet can continue the hot hand, that they can force a game seven for sure.
Isn't it crazy, too? Everybody thought Fred was crazy and just chasing this bag to go down to Houston. And it didn't take very long. What is this, his third season there? For them to be the 2-seed in the West? That dude, there aren't many guys in sports that just win at the clip he is able to win. No matter what the circumstance has been for him, He just is always a part of a winner. When you talk about that stuff that matters, that's not all to, and his, you know, his game is obviously incredible, but that dude just wins. Tonight, Knicks Pistons. That series has been highly entertaining. I've been following from afar. Maybe I'll tune in there.
I'm kind of rooting for the Knicks. Are you? How do you feel about that? I mean, it's been such a long time since the Knicks have been playing relevant basketball, and they try every single year. And I don't know if it's weird because I feel like everybody hates Tom Thibodeau. And
I don't hate Tom Thibodeau.
Well, I feel like the fan base, like they like,
yeah.
And I know it's New York and I know it's the media and all
he's
of that.
He's the most anti-load management coach there is. So I actually really like Tom
and he's,
Thibodeau.
He's kind of grumpy all the time and is kind of combative and like all of that. And I know the media loves to get him going and he gets angry. Like I love it. I'm kind of rooting for the Knicks to make a run here.
I've always rooted for the Knicks. I think they're, you know, most of the time I'm contrary. Like, I don't like the Lakers. I don't like the Yankees. But the Knicks I've always had a small affinity for because I think their fans are awesome. And I think they've had really cool players over the years. Larry Johnson's is probably my favorite all-time basketball player. So, like, I have always found myself like, you know, the Knicks are fine.
You know who one of my favorite all-time players is? I used to love John Starks.
A lot of people did. He was kind of a, you know, he's a little arrogant and all those things. He was this little dude out there competing. Right. Alan Houston was great for a long time. Like,
Ewing,
I liked a lot of.
Yeah, I was a Knicks, Patrick Ewing. I was a Knicks guy for a long time.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say that I'm a Knicks fan or anything even close to that, but I don't actively not want them to win.
I mean, when was the last time they were like nationally relevant? Like, I think there was that period of time they weren't winning titles, but they weren't winning titles even during this period I'm about to reference, but the Jeremy Lin taking the world by fire, all of that, like they weren't relevant for winning games necessarily, but he took the world by fire during that moment. And that was probably the last time that the Knicks were really like nationally talked about.
Landry Shamet's on that team, by the way, right now. Look, I think with Brunson and Karl Anthony Towns, like, they've got enough players. I don't know what their chances to win it are, but I'm glad they're in it. And the Pistons are a great young team, too. There's a lot of good NBA stories, and we are going to start talking more NBA now here on this show. But I'm excited about it. I mean, it's a good game. It's a good series. All right, we'll come back. Another hour of Sports Daily. Tim Fitzgerald joins in the next hour. Don't go away.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody, to another hour of Sports Daily. Glad to be here with you. It is Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester, Max Power producing. He's got your calls at 869-1240. He's got your video comments on Facebook, on YouTube, on X. We are glad to be here with you live. Tim Fitzgerald will join us later in this program to talk a little K-State. I'm curious to get his take on the new Serbian coming in to K-State basketball. Feels significant to me. What is he hearing? What's his Go Power Cat crew hearing? We'll have all that for you later in this hour. We can touch a little more on the Royals. We can touch a little more on the NBA playoffs. I want to ask Tommy about Aaron Judge and what he has been doing. And are we appropriately appreciating that? Because it's some of the best baseball we've ever seen, quite frankly. And I wonder if it's getting the attention it probably should. We'll talk about that a little bit. Max is firing up hockey bets for us. We got all kinds of fun stuff. Day baseball for the Royals. If you want to get in touch with the program and you are listening to us on the Odyssey app, you can do that as well. Just click that little microphone button. Real quick, let's give away some HTO. All you got to do is text the keyword TEA to 20357. That will get you a free iced tea from either East or West Wichita or down in Derby. You can do that right now. Text that keyword T to 20357. More than 26 flavors to choose from. Go inside. You can try them all for free. Here we go, Tommy. Into this hour, have you seen some of this? Because I have. People are taking the Aaron Judge numbers over the, you know, over the past basically 162 or whatever it is. This dude's batting 427 right now. Leads the big league in home runs. He's got 32 RBIs, which leads the league. His OPS leads the league. After what he did a year ago, which was basically block one of the best seasons we've ever seen from Bobby Witt Jr. from winning an MVP, rightfully so, with his 58 home runs and 140 RBIs. He already has the home run record. Like, do we pay enough attention to the kind of heater he's on? Because it's essentially like prime Barry Bonds stuff. And when it was prime Barry Bonds stuff, like, he was the biggest thing in sports. I don't know if that's a shift away from baseball. I don't know if it's because Shohei Ohtani has recalibrated our brains for what the standard of the best baseball player is. Whatever it is, though, I do kind of subscribe to the fact that we're not giving Judge enough run. I mean, he's been unflippin' believable.
Yeah, I mean, he's been amazing. I think part of it, if you'll remember back to a year ago, everybody remembers where he ended the year home run-wise. I think people forget about the fact he had a pretty slow start to the season last year, at least through the first month of the year. April was not good for Aaron Judge. And then he turned it on, and he turned it on phenomenally since then. In fact, the last calendar year, if you take all of his season last year minus April, and then you add in this April, the last calendar year for Aaron Judge has been insane. Like, we're talking about a slash line and an OPS that is like through the absolute roof. And we're talking about, like, if you look at batting average, on base percentage, slugging percentage, like all of the key metrics. I mean, he's lapping his contemporaries, including Bobby Witt Jr., Shohei Ohtani, Juan Soto. But I think that part of it is that he's been thought of as just this like power guy, the guy that's going to hit a bunch of home runs. He's doing a lot more than that. He's getting on base. He's able to drive in runs. He's got his wins above replacement is fantastic also. And it's ahead of the next best guy is Bobby Witt Jr. And it's not particularly close in war between Bobby Witt Jr. and Aaron Judge. So what Judge has been able to do as a complete player, not just a guy who's going to be a power hitter and hit a bunch of home runs, but not hit for average, not get on base, not drive in runs, not score runs, not all of that. I mean, like he's become, you know, completely like this full player. And it's on display all the time. So I do think we have to appreciate all of that, because if you're just looking at him through the lens of, yeah, he's a power guy and he's going to hit a bunch of home runs, that's not fully appreciating everything Aaron Judge can do.
I want to say this too. Like, if you take away the years where Bonds is accused of breaking the rules, Judge has been better than any of those seasons. Right, like the seasons where Bonds was better, and it's honestly, it's only like slightly better by war, by some of these metrics. Those are the years in question for Bonds. And so, like, is there a world, and I guess that, because I love doing this sometimes, like Shohei Ohtani, because of the two-way ability, best play, I get it, like great, because he impacts the game in both of those ways. But is there a world where Aaron Judge in these seasons is the best hitter we've ever seen? Like, are these the best offensive seasons we've ever seen?
They're up there. They're among them.
I think they have to. If you take away the steroid era years for some of these guys, I think it's better than anything we've ever seen.
100%. I mean, again, his individual stats and the way that he has been kind of turned into this complete player, I would agree with that. And, you know, I go back to what has been the knock on Aaron Judge all along is that he doesn't show up for the playoffs. And,
that's a different conversation.
Well, it is a different conversation. But I think part of the reason, I mean, your original question was, are we giving Aaron Judge enough credit? Is he getting enough run for what he's been able to produce? And I think it's hard for some people, especially in the New York media market, you know, to not connect those two things together and not give him the credit that he deserves for his individual success and the stat lines that he produces and all of that. because there's not a World Series ring to show for it. Right. So like he's been putting up these insane numbers. And like I go back to, like you mentioned Barry Bonds, you know, Barry Bonds was putting up insane numbers, again, clouded by steroids now and all of that. But putting up these insane individual numbers, he didn't have a World Series ring to show for it, you know, during that time as well. So, you know, I think if you want to compare it to that, it's kind of similar in that regard, too. But Yankees fans, I think they appreciate him as like this, you know, rock solid, like producing offensive threat all the time for sure. But I think they have a hard time separating that. And I don't blame them. They have a hard time separating that from the fact that when it's mattered the most, he hasn't shown up. He hasn't been able, you know, to get it done and get it across the finish line.
Right. And you know, that's okay. That's fair. Like I totally am fine. I mean, they have developed that standard. I have no issue with that. I think we may be like, and these, I'm not talking about career, by the way. Like Judge isn't over his career, the best hitter we've ever seen. It took him too long to get started for him to even sniff that. But these individual seasons are some of the best we've ever seen. If you go back, like even before Bonds was accused of dabbling into the things that were happening in baseball, like if you go back and just like that dude was absurd. He had three MVPs, Tommy, before those conversations ever even started, and like six gold gloves or more than that. He had like nine gold gloves. Like it's just crazy. What Barry Bonds was even before all of that. And like in all of those seasons offensively, Judge has been a little better. Now he's not the kind of defender Barry Bonds was back in those days or anything like that, but I don't know who else to compare it to offensively. I mean, maybe Shohei. I mean, it doesn't help Judge that Shohei is right there, and Shohei offensively is also really, really, really good and does the things with, you know, base running and all the things that he does a little bit differently. But I want to take a second because we never talk about him, or at least I don't, and appreciate just how good he's been. And I hope people, you mentioned slow starts. He is not off to a slow start this year. Like he is on fire. What does that mean? I don't know. And
so I do think, and this is kind of talking about, you know, the contemporaries around both Aaron Judge and Barry Bonds, you know, during the same kind of span when Bonds was doing this. Go back to the year, let's see, when was this? 2001, I believe. It was the year that Barry Bonds hit the 73 home runs. So Barry Bonds had a higher OPS. The next best was Sammy Sosa, and he was outpacing Sammy Sosa by 205 points over the course of that year. That was the next closest from 1 to 2, 205. So in the last year, Aaron Judge has out OPS'd Shohei Ohtani by 229 points over the last calendar year. So Aaron Judge is outpacing the rest of the league even more so than Bonds did in 2001 when Bonds hit 73 home runs.
So Judge right now, I'm trying to extrapolate his numbers over a career, over a season, and I just can't get it done fast enough here for the radio. But it just, I don't like the Yankees at all, but I am enjoying watching Aaron Judge do his thing. He's become such a good player, and I like Aaron Judge. I think he's a likable player too. But that's happening. Like if you haven't been paying attention, dude's hitting 427. We're a month into the season. 427. If that continues, I mean, we could be flirting with another home run chase. He's protected in that lineup. Like there's all these things that are going to be good for him to, you know, chase a little history this year. It's worth paying attention to.
May have been a good thing for him, for Juan Soto, to not be on the team anymore. I mean, like
that's an interesting idea. Anyway, we'll come back. More Sports Daily. Tim Fitzgerald later this hour. Don't go away.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today. If you're a parent or share a fridge with someone, Instacart is about to make grocery shopping so much easier. Because with family carts, you can share a cart with your partner and each add the items you want. Since between the two of you, odds are you'll both remember everything you need. And this way, you'll never have to eat milkless cereal again. So minimize the stress of the weekly shop with family carts. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game, you can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody, to Sports Daily. Glad to be here with you. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, Max Power producing. And we are having some fun here on a Thursday. Tim Fitzgerald joins in just a little bit. Let's talk a little football, Tommy. We have not yet done that today. A couple of headlines that we haven't hit on are this Falcons coach's son who's gotten his dad fined for like $100,000, and it's Ulbrich's kid, and it's funny, like the fines that are, and I get it. Jeff Ulbrich's kid is the one who made the prank call to Shedeur Sanders. I get why they got to come down hard on it, man. But sometimes when the NFL comes hard on some things and not on others, you're like, really? Prank call? But I get it. At the same time, like, you can't have people messing with like private information of players. Like, I get it, but the NFL, there's nobody that's going to win here. Like, the NFL's not, because it's got to come down hard, and then it looks a little silly to come down that hard. And then I think all the jokes are appropriate. I think that's about how you handle this. Like, ooh, cost your dad $100,000. Like, what's the equivalent for the rest of us?
Yeah, will that kid have to work it off, you know, forever? Like, are you going to have him go mow yards, you know, and all the money goes back to the dad? All jokes aside, it is unfortunate. I feel bad for Shedeur that, you know, that happened.
Like, the kid that made the prank call.
Yeah,
too.
It was a stupid decision, and we've all done really stupid things at that age. I feel obviously bad for Jeff Ulbrich, you know, that he's caught up in all of that. And by the way, he just started this job with the Falcons. I mean, he had a pretty tumultuous time as the interim head coach for the Jets and Aaron Rodgers and all of that taking over for Robert Saleh. And then it's like, okay, good, I'm done with that drama. I'm out of New York, and I don't have to worry about the Aaron Rodgers saga and all of that anymore. He goes to Atlanta, and like, this happens to him, and he's brand new on the job.
That's one of your things. Like, I just like the equivalent. There probably isn't one. I can't think of one that impacts you professionally in that way. Like, the money part is one thing. Like, we're all getting there, right? I remember I had an old Suburban. And I was driving it like an idiot out on the country roads, and like a pretty scared, like I fishtailed, went through a bar ditch and ran it through a barbed wire fence. Okay, there's a lot of elements here in play. A, that barbed wire fence wrapped around the top of the Suburban and just shredded it, like just totally destroyed the aesthetics of that vehicle. B, it just happened to be our barbed wire fence. So it was like, you know, like it was like, oh,
at least
man.
It was your barbed wire fence and not somebody else's.
I guess that's better, but it wasn't our land. You know, we had cattle on that land, so we had the fence. So like one of my brothers had to go fix it and I had to help him. But I remember when I got home, I'm just like, hey, I can't believe I did that. Like I was driving too fast. I went like, it was a little scary, but then I'm like, I'm dead. Like not even figuratively, like I am dead. I look at this car. So we lived out in the country. So I drove it like a half mile down the road away from the house and parked it and came back to the house. And I just sat at the front window. So I would give myself a head start for when my dad got home. Like he drove by down to the barn where I took it. And I knew like, okay, he's going to see it now. I've got this runway for when he has to walk back to the house to like figure out what the hell I'm going to do right now.
You're giving yourself a head start to get out of there.
Yeah, I don't even remember what he said. I mean, at that point, and this is probably where, this is what makes me think of it. Like at that point, like, what do you even say? You know, like what are you going to say to your kid? Like, you don't need to punish him. Like that's going to take care of itself. Like, you're just like, well, you're a dumbass. Like, yeah. I don't know what else to tell you. Don't do it again, I guess. Like, you know, like
did that. And I'm guessing that remained your car. Like you still drove that Suburban. Oh.
Absolutely.
Even though it was shredded, you know, and like that just became like part of the car. Yeah.
Yeah. It drove just fine. It was mine for another little while. And I was young too, because I had a farmer's license. I was like 15 years old. But yeah, it stayed mine until the car actually stopped running very well. But like, what do you say? What do you say to your kid if you're Jeff Ulbrich? Like, what are you doing? Like, what, you don't have to even say anything. It's like a self-inflicted punishment. And sometimes those are the best. Like, we're, men are stupid. Like for the handful of women that listen to this show, probably like we fully know it. We know it. We understand it. And dads understand it when it's their sons that, yeah, we're idiots. Like we really are. Like I joke with my wife and I'm like, listen, you can tell our daughters that that oven is hot and they will believe you. Our son's probably going to have to touch that oven to really believe that it's hot. You know, like that's where our brains
you
are.
You just
like,
got to double check. You got to experience it for yourself. And think about like
you said that, but
think about the fact like, you know, this guy, you know, is the defensive coordinator for the Falcons. He's been an NFL assistant coach for a long time, been in the NFL, and he's got a kid who's in high school. He's got buddies that are also in high school. They know that he's connected to the NFL. I mean, can you imagine? I would just guess that there's been temptation, and I'm sure he's not the only one. I'm sure there are probably a lot of sons of coaches that are in high school that are like, man, your dad's an NFL coach. You think you could get Shador's phone number? And he's probably like, I don't know, maybe like probably trying to impress his buddies or whatever. Like,
try.
I could try. And then he did. And then this is what happens. And like, so like, I mean, you mentioned like men are idiots and it's true. Like I'm 39 and I consider myself an idiot. I was that much more of an idiot when I was 17, you know? And so it was a bad mistake. I'm glad that the kid owned up to it. I'm glad that he called Shador. I thought that his apology was exactly what it needed to be. The fine. I understand the NFL feels like they need to do something in this regard. I understand that. Otherwise, they look like, you know, they're lax on that sort of thing. And I get it that they have to fine and do something. But the punishment of, like, the embarrassment and then, like, apologizing and having to talk to Shador on the phone and, like, all of that, that's, in my opinion, punishment in and of itself.
It is. It's punishment enough because like, you'll live – but, you know – let's be honest, like he gets to live with that street cred the rest of his life too. Like his buddies, like
you're the guy that got Shador's like phone number. Yeah,
he's good. He's gonna be good there. I think that it's a really interesting chapter of this Shador saga. It really is. Like it all goes hand in hand. This young person learned a lesson, Ulbrich's kid and everything. Yeah. Shador better have learned a lesson in all this too. And like now that we're, you know, I think now people are more prone because you've got this head scratching decision to have him fall that far. I think more people are in teams that like they're more prone to like attach themselves to some of this stuff now, whether they're doing it publicly or whether they're doing it a little more privately you're starting to hear now a pretty consistent message. Shadur approached this draft process just like Prime approached it a long time ago. Well, we're going to step in and like, there are teams I'm not going to let my son play for. Like that whole thing clearly translated right into the draft process for Shadur. And you hear things now, like he was asking teams like, why should I come play for you? Like this isn't college recruitment anymore, which is, you know, and to be fair, Shadur never had to go through that either. With his dad being the coach, but
like, I mean, he's on record in a press conference or in an interview, you know, saying two teams, generally speaking, if you don't want somebody to come in and change things for you, then don't get me, don't draft me. Like that's, he was like blatantly saying that. And I think that part of it, because we've seen athletes all the time that have been, you know, that they have made those declarations, things like that. I mean, famously Eli Manning and Archie Manning said he wasn't going to play for the Chargers, you know, so don't draft him. Like those things have happened. John Elway did that, you know, also all the way back in the day. The difference is the talent transcended those comments. And I think that some of these teams have not, they didn't believe that Shadur's talent translated. It didn't transcend those. It didn't make those comments seem legitimate. It's like, okay, look, you're not good enough to be able, like, you might be a good caliber quarterback for us. Like, you might be somebody that can help us, but you're not a sure thing. You're not this, like, undisputed number one franchise changing Super Bowl winning quarterback. You might be, but the jury is still out on that. And so the brashness and the arrogance of, like, don't take me, don't get me. I'm not, why should I go and play for you? You're not good enough to say that. I think that was resounding during the draft process.
Well, and so, like, I think like maybe Eli Manning was that kind of a college player. Maybe he wasn't. I don't know. But like he wasn't the one saying it.
Archie was.
Somebody else was saying it for him. Yes.
And by the way, Archie had the benefit of having Peyton in the league a couple of years before. And Peyton was a superstar.
Shadur has a lot of questions to answer based on, you know, can he play for anybody besides his dad? What I think he answered in his time at Colorado, like when he came to college, I had no idea he was as good as he was. I just knew he was coach's kid, right? And he happened. And so when they brought him in at quarterback, I don't remember what I was saying here at the time. I was like, I don't know. Like, okay.
I mean, he was gift wrapped.
I'm like, holy crap, he's really good.
He was gift wrapped and handed the starting job at Colorado as soon as his dad walked in the door. I mean, famously, the cameras followed Deion, and within like 30 seconds, telling the Colorado team, many of them were not going to remain on the team, but like, hey, everybody, this is your quarterback, you know, and Shadur comes in. Like, it was gift wrapped and handed to him on a silver platter. And while, you know, yeah, he delivered. He was able to deliver, you know, at Colorado and win games.
Big 12
and
offensive player.
Totally. Like, I'm not knocking that whatsoever. I think that there was the expectation that he was going to be gift wrapped and handed on a silver platter an NFL quarterback
That's
job
right.
as well.
Yeah. And that doesn't happen. Not through the circumstances, like all collectively. A, I agree. He's not that elite blue chip quarterback prospect where it's a no-brainer. But even then, there probably would have had to be some discussions. Like, I don't know that there have been a lot of guys that have come in personally and been that aggressive with their cockiness or whatever you want to call it, at that position anyway, which is the most important position. Like, I don't think teams care if your defensive tackle's coming in and having that conversation. Like, whatever, dude, just get in there. You know what I mean? Like it's a quarterback.
I think it was also a negative for Shadur when you compare and contrast him with the guy who did go number one overall, because Cam Ward, more so than anybody else, is like, put your head down and just go to work and not getting involved in all that drama. And so, you know, Shador's circus and the antics around him and Coach Prime and all of that definitely was highlighted and illuminated when you contrast him to the other top quarterback in the draft, who is very much not that way. Had Cam Ward not been in the class, then you wouldn't have anything to compare it to necessarily. And it would have been like, this is your guy. And it wouldn't be like so blatant and in your face how brash and arrogant Shadur is.
And their paths are both so similar and so different. Like, their on the field paths are very similar. their off the field paths are very different, right? Cam Ward, one scholarship offer, worked his way up from Incarnate Word, went to Washington State, had the big profile, the big platform at Miami. Shadur started at Jackson State. Now, he didn't, I think he did earn it by the time he actually played, but he didn't earn it in the door, right? He earned it out of the door, but not in the door, if that makes any sense. Like, he absolutely was a great college football player, and I loved him as a college football player. I thought he was, I mean, you know that. I think he's a good prospect. I think his toughness and all that was on display just about every week. But that was, you know, it was handed to him. And when you've had things handed to you for a while, when somebody says, hey, buddy, it doesn't work that way, you've got two choices. And now he has two choices. He can either feel sorry for himself that he got prank called and embarrassed at the draft and reevaluate the way that he's going to approach this. He can be as arrogant as he wants, but not to the detriment of a team. Or he can make an adjustment and say, whoa, like that obviously doesn't work here. Let me go out like I eventually did at Colorado and show everybody that I'm good enough to be here. So he's got an easy choice to make. There's a fork in the road for him. Like, go do exactly what you did at Colorado. Everybody said, oh, he's just got the job because his dad's the coach. Okay, maybe that's the case. But by the time he walked out of the door there, he was a Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year. They got a lot better, and he did not have much around him. So go do it again. Well, you're going to an organization that doesn't have a lot around you. You've got an open position. Go earn it. I mean, he's got his fork in the road right now.
On that note, too, I think the most unfortunate thing for Shadur, and, you know, I think some of it is, a lot of it is the circumstances and who his dad is and all of that. But the most unfortunate thing is that we're not talking about a guy that is not a good quarterback. He is a good quarterback. And I'm not as high on him as you are. Right. But I'm not going to discount the fact that, I mean, he's a good, solid quarterback. He was the Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year. It is, you know, between him and his dad, like, they did turn Colorado into a much more relevant program. They were right outside of the CFP last year. Like, so, like, those things are undisputed. Like, those are facts. The bad thing about it is, because of the circus and all of that, you forget about the fact that he's a good, solid quarterback. And because of everything else around him, you end up viewing him negatively. You know, I've seen people calling him a Nepo baby, and it's all about, like, because he's with his dad, and, like, that's the only reason. I don't think that's true. He's got talent. The guy has talent, but you forget about that, and all you think about is the hype and the arrogance and the brashness and the circus and all the things that are unnecessary. And then when you take a look at collectively, holistically, his game, while good, is not good enough, in my opinion, to support all the extra crap. Like, I don't want to, if I'm an NFL GM or coach,
clearly
I don't know
the
if
NFL
I
agrees.
I don't know if I want to live with all the crap that comes along with Shadur Sanders, with how good he is. If he was a blue chipper, elite, like, can't miss prospect, then sure, maybe you take it with you and you live with it. And I think the NFL showed that they're not really willing to do that either.
Obviously. And the thing is, and why this is so nice for the Browns now, they have a lot of options. There's very little pressure on them to do anything. If he's not humbled by this, and I think he probably will be,
I hope he is,
then he's never going to be. And if he ends up being Geno Smith or Baker Mayfield, I like it. I like to compare him to Baker. I've seen it'll be one of the best draft picks of the last decade. And so the Browns, who constantly get it wrong, kind of got gift wrapped this opportunity through all of this. Like, it is the perfect place he could have landed, right? Like, you want to go get fed some humble pie? Go to Cleveland, the place where quarterbacks go to die, right? Go there for a little bit.
When they already drafted a quarterback four rounds ahead of you in Dylan Gabriel. Like, so, I mean, it's not going to be handed to you. Andrew Berry, the GM from the Browns, said as much. Like, he was being vague. He didn't specifically say Shadur, but everybody knew he was talking about Shadur. Like, nothing's going to be handed to you. You come in and you work and you earn it. And, you know, so I think that he's got his work cut out for him. I hope he is humbled, because he does have talent, and I don't want to see that talent wasted. I don't want Shadur to be this generation's Johnny Manziel. Right, where there was all of this hype And Manziel was super arrogant at the time, came in, thought that he was entitled to all of it. And he was a flame out, like left the league and you know, didn't and never developed into anything. I don't want to see that for Shador. I hope he's humbled and I hope he comes in and he's able to actually compete and make it work.
We all want great quarterbacks. Like if you're a fan of the NFL, you just want great quarterback play. Even if it's great quarterback play that you can root against, it makes the league better. This story has become far more fascinating than even like even us who were very interested in Shador. We were having conversations when I told you I thought he'd be a top two quarterback taken in this draft before last season ever started, and we discussed that he obviously was not, but he probably should have been. Did he not shoot himself in the foot? Like, it's been even more compelling than we thought then through all of this. It's a great story. It's a great story.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview.
Thursdays mean a visit with our pal Tim Fitzgerald, our K-State insider. Go powercat.com, at Life of Fitz on social. Fitz, how are you this morning?
I'm wonderful. How are you, my friend?
Doing good here. The weather's turning. We're getting a little rain. We've got all kinds of things happening on the sports calendar. It's a good time of the year. I want to talk about the Serbian to K-State in just a minute. We were just talking about Shador Sanders. You follow this league as closely as anybody. I want to first, like pre-draft, where do you have or where did you have Shador in this draft?
Well, I'm certainly no expert on, you know, how talent converts from college to NFL. I don't go to the combines. I don't see these guys work out. As a player, I fully expected him to be first, maybe second round. I mean, that's everything I'd heard, seen. I think Shador's very good. And I think he had to do things in an unconventional way at Colorado just to survive without a tangible offensive line. Are there holes in his game? Yeah. Does he need improvement areas? Absolutely. But I didn't see him being any different than others that have holes in their game. But boy, did he... He and his father apparently blow himself up. I mean, it's just they made it almost impossible for a team and, more importantly, a head coach to draft this individual because it seemed it could be upsetting of your entire locker room, your culture. And meanwhile, the dad might be plotting to take your job if he wants his son to be quarterback. So it just turned into a giant mess. As I did a video on this, Jacob, and it was a scientific look at applying the hot crazy scale to Shador, and he got way more crazy than hot. Nobody wanted to date / draft him, and that's just—it was self-inflicted, entirely, 100% self-inflicted.
No question.
He kind of—I hate to say this because I actually like Shador. I know he's got some things about him that people around in that circle don't really like, but I just think he's grown up with a sense of entitlement that comes with his last name, comes with the fact that dad always wants to be his coach and start him, and he's never had to prove it, and he's going up against a lot of really good football players now, a lot of good quarterbacks going for the same job, and he chooses not to prove it, and so he did this to himself.
And he's got, I said this to Tommy last night, like he's got a fork in the road now. Now go take it. Like now mm-hmm. go do the thing that you've never had to do. And I think ability-wise he can. And he's probably at the perfect organization for nobody to really care about all of those things. It's Cleveland. The most blue-collar town in the country, maybe. Like get out there and show what you can do. It was interesting. It was very interesting. Colorado's an interesting program. Maybe we'll talk a little football before we're done. But I want to talk hoops, Fitz.
Okay.
This Serbian at K-State, Kostic, went and got, you watch his tape, he seems like a really good fit to me for Jerome Tang because he looks like he's going to like to have the ball in his hand. They certainly paid a pretty penny. I'm not sure if you've heard any of that or done your own digging or recently. The original reporting was $1 million, according to the Serbian site. Now maybe it's more like 2.5. This was basically their Coleman Hawkins get of the offseason. What is the latest with all of this with Kostic?
Well, in asking around about him, because I'm going to shock you here. I don't typically scout Serbian basketball. I know. I'm lazy.
Come on, man.
I know. But I had someone reach out and say, this guy's a lottery pick. This guy is legit.
Yeah.
As a 6'5 guard, I can do it all. And so, in terms of talent, it's a great pickup. I'm guessing that as I see more and more coaches go to Europe or other places, particularly Eastern Europe, Serbia and Croatia and those places, they found something they like in this era of NIL and, the transfer portal. They find guys that have grown up with club basketball, are really coachable, have great fundamental sets. They carry with them stuff that, honestly, a lot of American players don't, because they're not getting this fundamental coaching. And I think they're really happy with what they got. But this is just a piece. They got a lot of roster spots still to fill, and I think we'll see some more overseas players, at least one, and then get back into the portal and polish off that roster. But it's a nice pickup.
I've watched, I don't know anything about him, obviously, just like nobody else does, but I watched the tape, and his game looks like some of these Eastern European stars we're seeing in the NFL, in the NBA, right? Like they're very comfortable with the ball in their hand. They can attack in a variety of ways. They're professionals because they've been that. And so the thing that keeps standing out to me is like, man, that's what Jerome Tang needs. Like whatever it is, like it doesn't, at least to most of our amateur eyes, look like there's like complicated design to K-State's offenses over the year. It's kind of been put the ball in somebody's hand and do all the other things really well. By the way, that worked for Houston this year, right? They just let Cryer and Sharp go out and be the only offensive dudes really that touch the ball, and it worked fine. So I think it can work. I think it feels like, as much as he's an exciting player, it feels like a good fit.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, even though he's a young guy, he brings a lot of experience playing in Euro basketball clubs for his whole life. It's a completely different basketball culture over there. They literally, from what I'm understanding, had to buy his contract out. And this is where college basketball is now competitive. They can get these European kids that are playing professionally, technically, in minor league basketball as they develop their skills. But the European system is almost like minor league baseball. You got these clubs that have lower teams, and you come up through the ranks and you learn to play. Well, I don't know the level for sure, but it's almost like Kansas State just signed a young guy out of AA, and they're bringing him in to play college basketball because they now can, because they're now paying players. It's insanity. Essentially, Kansas State basketball is functioning as a professional franchise by buying a contract of a player from overseas. This is where we're at in college sports.
It is. I mean, I don't know. We'll see if that becomes a thing. I don't know how much I like or dislike that. I mean, we have strong opinions on a lot of the things happening. I don't really have one on getting young, like 17, 18 year old European players to come play college ball. I mean, it opens up the pool of players. It probably hurts high school players a little bit, but I don't have a strong take on it. It also helps programs maybe like Wichita State, who we watch here, potentially go find players. The interesting part is, like, you're buying production there if you're K-State with Kostich. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of teams paying big bucks for non-production. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to spend your money, like, you know, this guy's been productive. We're seeing that kind of money thrown around for players that averaged like 8 points a year ago.
The market's insane, man. Some of the prices I'm hearing players are going for simply don't make sense. But the demand for these players has exceeded the supply, and that's what happens in a free marketplace. As soon as one program says you're worth $1 million and we're willing to pay it, you know what just happened? The market adjusts to that. This level of guy is now worth $1 million, and it's gone insane. And hopefully the future of revenue sharing will calm this down, but I don't have any trust that it will. I think it'll fly off the rails in a different direction.
It will, but you got to have time. We just need time. Just remember, it's better than it was when players got nothing. about the table. I don't know where it lands either. I don't even know what to tell people anymore, because I've been an advocate for players getting paid. I'm like, guys, this is even too crazy for me. But I think you had to have the chaos to get to to the calm that will eventually get there. Tim Fitzgerald joining us, publisher, gopowercat.com. Big addition for K-State basketball. I think he's done a nice job with the roster. K-State football gets through the draft. Giddens finds, a pretty good spot for him. And there was it was a nice draft day for K-State. What were your takeaways there?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, exceedingly happy for Jacob Parrish. You know, there's some real comparisons between Parrish and Giddens. They come in as Kansas talent, wasn't highly rated. K-State got them in camp, saw them first person, and said, there's something here. Particularly, I remember this with Jacob Parrish wasn't going to get a K-State offer. Then he came to camp, and Chris Kleiman saw him in person. He said, that's my guy. I know he's small, but he can play. And he was right. Nobody really wanted DJ Giddens between, questionable football skills and academics and just a bunch of other stuff. He's not a real verbal guy. He probably didn't interview well with coaches. And K-State turned him into, gave him an opportunity to turn himself into something incredible. And DJ earned, like Jacob, every bit of this with daily commitment, getting better every day. It's the K-State way. Both of them are epitomize that. And I think we'll do well in the NFL. And Marquis Siegel goes to a good fit in San Francisco. They probably want him as a nickel and on special teams, and I think he can do that. So, it was a good day for K-State football, and it just shows that the talent K-State's getting isn't that far behind anyone else. That, like everyone else in the Big 12, maybe the elite upper shelf physical freaks that can also play aren't coming here, and that's why they're getting drafted in the first round out of the SEC or Big 10. I can go with that, but there is talent spread across all of college football. And I keep coming back to this, Jacob. Texas had 12 players drafted. Arizona State had one, and that was Cam Scataboo. And that one was all they needed to stay in a game as a team, competitive, and probably should have beaten Texas. So talent is the only measurement of quality.
That's a really good point. And K-State's had a lot of success in the draft over the years. I think, you may be speaking to KU fans a little bit there. They're starting to get guys drafted again, but it hadn't always been there. But it's not the ultimate indicator, especially in the Big 12. It might be in some leagues. It's not in the Big 12, though. Never has been. We'll see. I think that's good. I mean, look, K-State's got a chance to win this league next year in football, right? Even with those losses, they got a chance to win this league with Avery Johnson, a quarterback.
Yep. They do. They really do. It's going to be an interesting year. Obviously, Texas Tech has decided to play the game and, have a donor that's willing to give you about $40 million in NIL, and you go out and get some dudes. We'll see if that works. If it does, it's going to be scary for the two big conferences that a team in Lubbock, Texas can go be competitive by playing their game and buying players. This is going to be a really interesting season for the program at Kansas State and for the conference. And we just did a show on this on the Big 12 Insiders channel on YouTube that, hey, look, they got to win, and they got to win now. They can't mess around, because the new contract isn't that far away. The negotiations start. They're going to have to start proving as a conference, the Big 12, that viewership isn't as big a gap between the Big 10 and SC as people might perceive.
Fitz, always appreciate it. Go to GoPowerCat.com. Find all the latest. Thanks for being with us again this week. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, my friend.
All right, that'll do it for us on a Thursday. Thanks to Tim Fitzgerald for stopping in, bringing a little light on that Kostic situation. I'm excited about the player. Rick asks Fitz if he's a professional. Are they buying a professional? Is he going to go to class? I'm not sure, Rick. I assume he will, like most of these players do. I don't know if any players go to class. I mean, I have no idea. But I can tell you that it's probably not top of mind for everybody. Everyone wants to know if he can play basketball. That's where we are in college sports now. Love it or hate it, it's where we are. And K-State goes and gets a pretty high-profile player in it. For Tommy and Max, I'm Jacob. We'll see you then.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.